Hey,
Hey, Gru, what's going on?
hey. Nothing. I can't feel my left arm today. Do you think that's a bad thing?
Listen,
What?
okay, listen here. Here's the scene description,
Oh,
okay? I had a
okay.
dream last night. I came up with the perfect thing.
The perfect thing.
The perfect thing.
You know, my arm is really numb, but all right, go ahead anyway.
All right, so look, here's the scenario. You and I are running on the beach. We do a slow
That's
motion,
hot.
100-yard dash on the beach. We're all oiled up, hairless. We're muscleless. They're showing our sagging skin sacks.
Nice.
We're dripping with boiling sweat. I'm winning this race most of the time, but since you're younger, we're going to have the gravity-loving upstart jump ahead,
Hey.
and we celebrate with a long, vibratory embrace amongst the crashing waters of the Pacific. How does that sound?
It sounds great, but isn't that the plot of Rocky III?
Ricky 3? I don't know
Ricky?
anything about it. All right, fine. Just do the regular thing.
Okay. That must have been some dream you had. All right, on me in one, two, three.
Hi, I'm Evan Moody.
And I. Oh, shit.
What's going on?
Nothing. No, I'm just going to hit the signature. I'm. Fuck.
Seen it before. They won't stop until you're dead, too.
From internationally acclaimed action director Ringo Lam. Van Damme and Natasha Henstridge of Species. Maximum Risk. Welcome to the other side of safe.
Yeah, I'll get it. Hello? Hey, yo, scumbag. Hey, suck your own. Eat me. Hey, same to you, buttface. Mom says hi.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Live from the last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network Studios, it's Nothing Worthwhile presents Van Dammit, a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. Here's Evan Moody and Andrew Guthius.
Everybody was kung fu.
Van Damme playing twins again. We're ready to go. Let's try it again. Jean-Claude Van Damme playing twins again. Damn, that Spielberg is good. It's Nothing Worthwhile presents Van Dammit, a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. On today's show, with Jean-Claude Van Damme playing Alain, playing Mikhail, playing Alain. Well, I'm all confused. To clear this all
Me too.
Up,
Me
let's
too.
Bring in. Let's bring in our resident Van Dammeologist, Andrew Gruthius. Gru,
hey.
How the hell are you? How the hell are you, my friend?
Doing beautifully on this, well, I really don't know what it's like outside yet, but I'm sure it's lovely here in South Florida on this Sunday morning. Doing just fine. How about yourself?
Gru, I'm a little slow this morning.
Now, why would that be? Usually, you know, you're up at the you know, the crack of dawn, and you're out there running and doing your stuff, and you know me, I'm not.
Yeah, there's none of that today. Last night, we went to Marie's good friend, Maria. She had her 50th birthday. Now, by the way, I got to tell you about this. They rented literally in a mansion in Paradise Valley, which is like one of the more exclusive neighborhoods here in Phoenix. And it was like on top of a mountain, 12 rooms, beautiful view. And so, by the way, you would have liked this. The girl, 50 years old. But
I like it already.
Yeah. The theme of the party was 13 going on 30, that Jennifer Garner movie.
Yeah.
She wore the same dress, I guess, that Jennifer Garner wore, and they did like the Thriller dance, which apparently is a big scene in the movie.
You didn't?
Are you familiar with this?
No, I never saw the movie, but you didn't invite me to this?
Well, by the way, this was like
I would have gotten on. Thanks, make me feel better.
God bless New You Life Center. I found out that Marie has like a whole cabal of California women that travel to Arizona to get work done. And
all right, well, just tell her to have somebody waiting for me when we're there.
Well, yeah. So anyway, so we're about to leave, and
notice
her son,
he just ducked that question. Go ahead.
No. Listen, believe me. Her youngest son comes over to me and says, "Hey, before you go, let's drink a beer." And I'm like, "All right, you know what? I'm not a big drinker."
How old's her son? 9.
He's like 27.
Oh, all right.
Come on, stop! How dare you? And
the word "son," I don't think of a man. I think
of
a kid.
Well, I mean, I'm over 50 years old, so they're well into their 20s. So you know, I actually thought about New York. I said, you know what? I had a light beer at the end of the concert, the end of the charity, benefit. So I'm like, you know what? It went down pretty smooth. Screw it. I'm going to be with the young people. I'm going to drink a beer. So I grabbed like a beer, and then he's like, listen, we're going to shotgun it. And I'm like, what? He goes, so he walks me over, and he has like a little can opener thing, and he's going to like jab it. And then one of the older milfy lady says, no, do this funnel. It's easier. So now I'm like, what am I, Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Yes.
So, yeah, they pour it down this little funnel thing. I shotgun the beer and,
I'll do one.
Did it in 3 seconds. And the kid was like, yeah.
You were literally like Will Ferrell in Old School.
Yeah, well, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think I saw that video on your school district's website.
Yeah.
So you might want to check into that.
Yeah, I think Marie was going to post it on her social media. Hopefully she maybe I'll tell her to pass on that one.
Well, there's an expletive at the end you might want to get rid of.
Yeah, I don't really think they even care, to be honest with you.
That's true. You're right.
I think people have done a lot worse. I do want to say one other thing, speaking of Marie. But so Friday, end of the work week, I'm still at work. My office is all the way in the back, very private. So I said, you know what? Ooh. I was doing this compliance thing. So I'm basically looking at lists and checking kids off on a database, so to speak. And I said, you know, I want to put a little background noise in my office while I'm doing this. So, you know, I'll usually go to YouTube. And I said, you know, I want to listen to a podcast. So I'll go to the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, the website.
Friends.
And so, yeah, well, listen to this, though. So I'm looking at
Is this going to get us in trouble?
Well, maybe. I'm looking at the different podcasts.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'm looking at the Rocky stuff. It's kind of quick. And, like, the first long-form podcast is us doing Hard Target. So I said, you know what? I don't usually listen to it on the feed. Let me click on it and hear. So they cut out, unless I am completely wrong here, they cut out all of Marie's commercial and our opening signature. And it just goes into Kung Fu Fighting.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't look. To be fair, I usually don't listen to our content just because I'm one of those people who just doesn't really need to listen to himself or to watch himself or whatever. I'm just so disgusted. But
really?
So I did not know that. That's Listen, you know, we're guests in their house, and you know, we put our podcast on our network, you know, on Spreaker. That's our platform. You know, it's unedited there. It gets posted to the Nothing Worthwhile. So I guess it's disappointing. I don't quite understand it. But
yeah,
I mean, it's whatever the show, you know, like you're right. The show is the show. It either is or it isn't, you know,
well, I mean, if somebody had contacted me and said, look, you know, could we listen, you know, if Orion said, let's not do the, commercial, I'd probably say no problem. But that's my fiance. It's kind of a goof, and we're just trying to goofy support her business. So I might do
it's not. It's not. It's not a goof if they go in there.
Yeah, I would do it. You know, I would do it for Andy if he had family had some other endeavor or something like that. I'd gladly do it. You know, we're just trying to be supportive, and I love our opening signature. I like the way it sounds as we go into the into our content.
Oh, it's part of the show.
You know what? Get me Don Buchwald on the phone now.
We can do that.
Our agent.
I don't know if I can get you Buchwald. I can get you Dominic Barber, though.
Yeah, that guy, I think, is falling on hard times. You know, the last I heard, he was on, like, one of those anti-Stern podcasts,
no.
dishing on Howard. And he's really fallen off the face of the earth.
Wow.
So I don't know how much I would... I would put into Dominic's deal. So, all right. So, listen, I'll chat with Ryan on Messenger as I let him know that this podcast is ready to go, and we'll see what he says.
All right.
To our brethren. Anyway, let me throw it to you, Gru.
Go ahead.
You want to go right into Maximum Risk with Jean-Claude, or do you want to span the universe and talk about some of our 80s guys?
Why don't we go, you know, so we don't, you know, because they're probably pissed at us already, so they probably just want us to get to Maximum Risk, so let's go right into Maximum Risk.
All right, so if we're going to go right into Maximum Risk, let me just page down on my notes.
We're going to span the universe. Don't think we will be censored. This is anti-woke podcast.
So, yeah, I know. What, do we have to get verified by Last of the Action Heroes?
Do we have to ask Elon Musk if we can put a disclaimer, you know, our sponsor at the beginning?
Yeah, perhaps. I'm going to step off for 30 seconds. I have a special outfit I'm going to wear in honor of Maximum Risk.
No.
All right, so I'm going off camera for like 20 seconds, and then I'm going to... I will have a special outfit. Okay, hold on one second.
All right, go ahead. All right, this is our first costume change in the history of Nothing Worthwhile / Van Dammit. He really went away. I don't know where he's going. But we've got Maximum Risk coming up. Jean-Claude Van Damme. Ooh! That is a...
I'm in just a towel.
He is. He certainly is.
In honor of the sauna scene, I'm in just a towel broadcasting for Maximum Risk.
I see that. I don't know how I'm going to keep my composure during this.
Scene, by the way. I don't know how a gaggle of men, and they're all fighting, and yet the towels remained on the entire time.
You're obviously speaking of the Russian bathhouse.
Yes, that's right.
Well,
clearly my favorite scene.
That's a challenge to you know, when you're imagine sitting in an audience. Well, I mean, I didn't see this movie until yesterday. Imagine sitting in an audience. You got an audience filled with Van Damme's people, like, you know, charged up male teenagers who are just half of them are there to see Van Damme kick ass, and half of them are there to see Natasha Henstridge's tits. But everybody is an alpha male. And then you have this long, drawn-out scene of a whole bunch of dudes basically naked, save for a towel, for a good, like, 5 minutes there. You know, and everybody, not that anybody's, you know, homophobic, but that's not what they came to see.
Well,
you know?
You know, it's funny because I like the way you clarified it. It was the Russian bathhouse scene.
Yeah.
I felt like I was either in a Russian bathhouse or I was back at Kutch's.
The good old Catskills, yeah.
Yeah,
because
like,
those accents were so far off.
And I remember, like, as a kid walking through whatever, like the sauna in Kutch's, and I was like, this doesn't seem right.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't seem wrong.
It doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem completely wrong, but, yeah, I mean, you know,
I'm like 7 years old, and I'm like, Daddy. He's like, come on, get going.
It's like, this is horrible. It's wonderful in its own way, but it's horrifying.
Why are fat, oiled up men in just towels? He was like, listen, let's go to lunch. There's a buffet in there's a buffet in the Sid Rosenberg room.
Let's get some matzo balls. Get it? Balls. Let's go. Get some balls.
All right, crew. Let's get to Maximum Risk. It's a 1996 American action thriller film directed by Hong Kong director Ringo Lam.
Ringo Lam, not the Ringo Lam.
No, not Ringo Starr, Ringo Lam in his American directorial debut, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme and Natasha Henstridge. The film was released in the U.S. on September 13, 1996. Grew today's Van Damme podcast, Maximum Risk, is brought to you by New U Life Center, making you fall fabulous. Follow New U Life Center on Instagram at New U Life Center to take advantage of their specials and monthly giveaways. Check out all of their medical weight loss programs at www.newlifecenters.com or give them a call at 602-274-0068. Tell them that Moody and Groove sent you and receive a big 15% off your first service. New Life Center, Phoenix Premier Med Spa for Botox, fillers, laser, aesthetics, weight loss, and hormone optimization. A big Van Damme thank you to New Life Center. We're going to switch it up a bit. We're going to talk about the casting first for Maximum Risk.
All right.
Of course, we have Jean-Claude Van Damme as Alain Moreau.
And?
Or Mikhail Moreau, playing Alain Moreau.
Mikhail, what was his last name? Because it wasn't the same last name,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right. I don't have it.
I don't even know if they even mentioned it.
I have Natasha Henstridge.
As Alex,
Jean-Yves Anglade as Sebastian, Zach Grenier as Ivan Dzaskov, Paul Ben-Victor as Agent Pellman, Frank Senger as Agent Loomis, Stefano Miltsakakis as Redface.
I got nothing.
Frank Von Eakin as Davis Hartley. What is going on? Is this a Howard Stern phony phone call? Grew, obviously the one that stands out right away is the lovely and talented Natasha Henstridge of Species fame. Grew, we'll take a closer look at Miss Henstridge in a future Van Dammit podcast. But for now, any quick thoughts on Natasha Henstridge?
Well, she and many other things stand out, if you know what I mean. She definitely stands out and makes parts of me stand out. I'm very impressed with I was actually, believe it or not, I haven't seen I don't see her in much. I've seen her in Sphere and a couple other things, but
you mean Species?
Species, yeah. Sorry. And honestly, before seeing her in until I saw her in this, I forgot how really like beautiful she is. Like she's not an airhead. She's not, you know, they could have gone that way, but she's a good actress, and she feels like the smartest person in the room in her scenes. So I like this casting and I like her for many different reasons. She brings it in many different ways. I don't know how many different puns we can make on this, but
I'm not going to listen.
She's damn hot.
I'm not 20 years old. However, the scene where I think they're back at Mikhail's apartment and she's changing and he takes like a quick glance, like through like a mirror, and he sees her, you know, naked, changing. Yeah, that, I mean, because, well, in all honesty, they kind of dress her, and for most part, when they're on the run, in all seriousness, she's wearing like baggy kind of clothes and stuff. You don't really, I mean, obviously, you know that she's
I think
quite
that's hot.
And,
I like that.
Okay.
That turns me on. It really does. It really does. But, you know, like the scene, you know, where they screw in the bathroom when the two cop, when Taggart and Rosewood are sitting in the bed over there, you know, which is kind of, which is actually pretty funny. I think it could have been a lot funnier. Okay. But we'll get to that. But that scene, while somewhat gratuitous as far as like you need the sex scene in the R-rated action movie in the mid 90s, she made it less gratuitous. The way she, you know, just her natural ability to act romantic. I really, and I know it sounds silly, and it's, you know, but I really. The scene came off as much less gratuitous and more necessary for the characters than it might have if it was someone lesser talented involved, I think.
Well, here's what I will say, and I want to save this for my final review.
Okay.
I did feel they toned down in this Van Damme movie. They toned some of the gratuitous stuff down. I would agree with you that the scene seemed a little bit more, in all seriousness, it seemed a little bit more organic.
Yes.
Like they're in this very stressful and they're a lot, you know, in this bathroom and it's like, let's have this release. I'm really being serious.
I agree.
I did feel they toned down the body stuff, even with Van Damme. It was a little bit more, let's keep the shirt on and let's try to focus on the action and the plot, so to speak, of the movie.
I'll save it for more.
Well, Gru, there was two people that stood out to me, obviously. Well, not maybe not obviously. Zach Grenier.
Yeah.
Was one. He played Ivan. I just, you know, as I'm watching the movie, I'm like, oh, my God, I know that dude. Like, I don't know him, but I know him. And so I did a little bit of research.
I know. I knew it right away. I knew where he was from right away.
All right, well.
Who's going to say it, you or me?
You want to go? I mean, I have some facts on him. You want me to read it through and give us some thoughts on Mr. Zach?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
All right, well, then he played first season of the television show 24 as Carl Webb. He played Andy Kramer, the gambler who brought the plague to town on Deadwood. He's been in several episodes of Law and Order, played Edward Norton's boss in Fight Club. Mel Nicolai in Zodiac, a good movie, both David Fincher films. He was in Twister. He was even in the movie Tommy Boy.
That was where he's the guy who's like, oh, I'd love to get me some of that, and then like yells at Spade to turn off the camera at the wedding scene. Remember that?
Yeah.
He's like, good job, Tom. That's him.
He was in Donnie Brasco as a marriage therapist. He was on the television series The Good Wife. Let me just read you real quick his television resume. The Equalizer, Kate and Ally, Miami Vice, Golden Girls, Law and Order, NYPD Blue, Ally McBeal, Judging Amy, The Practice, X-Files, Curb Your Enthusiasm, 24, yep. JAG, Without a Trace, I mean, Deadwood, CSI New York, Boston Legal, all the way to Ray Donovan, a great show that I used to watch. Film resume real quick on Zach, Working Girl, Problem Child 2, Cliffhanger, Tommy Boy, Twister, Maximum Risk, Donnie Brasco, Fight Club, Shaft, Swordfish, Zodiac, Fantastic Four, The Rise of the Silver Surfer. Gru, you knew him right away. Pretty incredible run of TV and film work from Mr. Grenier.
Yeah, he's a very recognizable. He's one of those guys, you know his face, you don't know his name. I certainly didn't know his name.
Right, I agree.
But, you know, I immediately recognized him from Tommy Boy, and I recognized him from what actually is my favorite episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And that is the one, if I don't know how big a fan you are of that show.
I would say I'm about a 7 out of 10.
Okay, so do you remember?
I'm pretty good.
Do you remember the episode from, I think, season 3, the one with the doll? He loses, he cuts the hair off the girl's doll, and has to replace it. Do you remember that one?
I love the setup already.
But yeah, but so I'm not going to get into it. But he plays like the head of the network, whose daughter it is, whose doll gets her hair cut. So Larry's like trying to make a deal with this guy, and you know they're trying to make nice, and then he goes and completely destroys her his daughter's doll. His wife is actually played by Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks' wife. So it's the funniest episode, in my opinion, of that show. And he's really good. He puts it on a little thick, I think, in Maximum Risk, I have to say. But yeah, he's a talented guy.
All right, we'll get to your thoughts about his specific job here in Maximum Risk in a little bit. The other one that stood out for me, again, is a similar. Like, I recognize the face, don't know the name, was actor Paul Benvictor, who plays Agent Pellman.
I recognize him. Let me see. I remember him specifically from the movie Daredevil. He played like a real scumbag in Daredevil. I remember him from that, and I know he's been in 100 other things. I just can't name one other than that. I think it's him.
Am I the only guy who actually liked the movie Daredevil?
I didn't like what you saw. There is a like 2.5 hour R-rated director's cut, which actually is pretty good.
Of course,
it's actually pretty good. You have it too because you have the access to the Vudu. So watch it whenever you want. It's pretty good.
All right.
It's pretty good.
But everything with Andy, it's like, hey, did you like the album Piano Man? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, I didn't. I like the European press import has a early version of Scandinavian Skies at night.
Hey, man, we used to hang out at those record stores looking for that, you know?
No, you're right. Let me give you real quick. So I did look up real quick a couple of things on Paul Benvictor, Cagney and Lacey. He was on the HBO drama The Wire and Entourage. My Name is Earl.
Chicago Hope.
Let me see. Well, let me go over. Let's see. I have NYPD Blue, Monk, CSI. Let's see. I got some movies on Paul Benvictor. The Rookie, Tombstone, True Romance, Maximum Risk, Metro, Point Blank, A Civil Action. Great.
Yes. Love A Civil Action. Travolta, great movie.
You're right. Daredevil.
Yeah, I know it.
Empire State, Grudge Match, Get Hard, Monster, The Irishman, and The Banker.
Ah, I remember him in The Irishman, yes. Okay, yeah.
Quite the solid career for Paul Benvictor. Andrew Von Gruthius, any thoughts on Paul Benvictor?
Yeah, one of those, again, same with the other guy whose name I already forgot. Zach something or other. Same thing, you know. One of those invaluable, recognizable faces that nobody knows their name, but they lend not only credibility, but they lend talent. And they make things around them better. These guys get paid a lot of money because of their, you know, ability to be able to. They're character actors, and this guy is no less than the guy before. You know, both of them. They just that credibility is very strong. And well, I don't want to give any criticisms, but these two guys were big gets for a movie like this. I must say.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he plays the role. He looks the role for sure.
Yes,
you know, with the balding head, the overcoat, the brown overcoat. You know,
yeah,
kind of like the mussy suit. Yeah, I agree. It's two guys you've seen, and you're like, I know this guy, but you don't know their name.
Right,
you've just seen him in a lot of things. So, all right. Some production notes on Max Risk. The film was originally known as The Exchange. Then it was retitled Bloodstone. Now, Jason, and this is kind of interesting to
That's
me. Jason
two other titles Fried- that don't make sense, but go ahead.
Yeah, Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer, better known for the Scary Movie franchise and other parody movies, performed an uncredited rewrite on this film. So I did think that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting, and it actually solves a riddle for me. But go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you when it comes up.
Okay.
Well, all right. Or do you want me to say it now? Well, it's because it's part of a criticism. Because it's part of a criticism. So go ahead.
Let's continue. I want to hear for your overall review.
Okay.
I do have some fun facts courtesy of IMDb on Maximum Risk. Jean-Claude Van Damme, it was his idea that Asian actor-director Ringo Lam direct this film. And, of course, it was his American directorial debut. Same thing as John Woo. And so it leads me to ask you, what is with Jean-Claude in looking to Asian film directors? Do you think that he's a fan of their style? Or I don't have any other notes on it except we got two Asian, big-time Asian directors who have made their American debuts with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well, I'm sure that Van Damme is, you know, being from the other side of the world, he's much more well-versed in, like, foreign cinema than you know, people like us, I would say, than people who are basically think that all movies are made in America. But I think at this point, I didn't even know he chose the director, but at this point, I think his stardom is at a place where he could start picking his directors. And as you say, this guy is like a protege of Zhang Wu. And
I don't know if he's a I don't know. I just know that, ironically enough, or it's, you know, it's a great trivia that two big time Asian action directors made their American debuts with. In the American market with JCVD.
Well, I'm guessing that Jean-Claude probably would have wanted a more well-known, but because, as I've maintained, he's never been on that A-level action star where, like, Stallone and Schwarzenegger were. So I'm going to say that he, you know, that he did exactly what you said. He found someone whose style and movie making action style that, you know, might cater to martial arts, which is what JCVD is all about in many ways. So I'm guessing that he did it based on that. You know, I'm guessing he probably wanted John Woo, and somebody suggested, you know, the other John Woo, you know, in a way. Does that make any sense?
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with your earlier statement. I think he's looking for somebody that matches his style, who's, you know, talents. You know, it's almost like, as you were speaking, it's like the NBA scouting overseas. I mean, you know, it's like you're looking for talent outside the box. And maybe he's trying to think outside the box and find directors that whose skill set could match his skill set. So,
yeah.
And we'll talk about whether or not it was a winning package, you know, towards the end here. Gru, this was Jean-Claude Van Damme's first starring film under his contract with Sony Pictures. Now, around May of 1996, while working on Max Risk, Warner Brothers offered Jean-Claude Van Damme the role of main villain in an upcoming movie, an action thriller titled Sandblast, described as both a Die Hard and cliffhanger in a desert sandstorm. There was an original spec script. It was sold to Warner Brothers and producer Joel Silver. When the project first started to get off the ground in 1995, Eddie Murphy was originally going to play the lead role due to the fact that Eddie wanted to do a more serious action movie, but eventually left to star in Metro. And in 1996, Wesley Snipes signed to star in Sandblast for $10 million. The plot of the film would have been an ex-landmine expert and army specialist who joins up with a team of commandos who are sent into the Iraqi desert sometime after the Gulf War to find lost nuclear warheads, and they have to do this while dealing with deadly terrain, a huge sandstorm, and a team of traitorous Green Berets who are also looking for the warheads, with Van Damme playing the leader of the evil Berets. Van Damme refused to play the villain, and he didn't like that his character at the end would get killed by Wesley Snipes' character. So despite the studio already securing the budget and getting the crew, everybody in place, Van Damme bowed out, and the film was ultimately canceled due to this and some other problems with pre-production. I don't know why I read you all that, Gru, but do you have any thoughts about Van Damme and Wesley Snipes and Sandblast?
Well, I'd never heard that story, but obviously, are you implying that the movie got canceled because he didn't want to do it?
I mean, I'm looking at my notes. It absolutely implies that Van Damme was part of the reason.
All right, because I would think that there are other that if you've got Wesley Snipes and or Eddie Murphy, you know, at that time, that's – although, yeah, Murphy left, but
yeah,
I would think I kind of like Metro, but that's going off in a much different direction. I would – that's a little that's kind of silly. You get a chance to play – I mean, actors love to play bad guys. Like, it gives them a chance to – you know, like to really branch out and to really, you know, have some fun and chew the scenery a little bit, to break the rules, as it were. You know, I'm a little disappointed. You know why? And I'm going to say this. This might ruin all of our Van Damme podcasts from now on.
No.
But what is my, but if you want to know what my pick is, Jean-Claude Van Damme's best performance, it's in The Expendables 2, where he was the bad guy. He was great. I loved him in that movie. So I would have been fascinated to see him take a villainous turn at the younger stage of his career where he's only playing good guys. You know,
well,
I would have loved to have seen it.
To me, this reads, again, that Jean-Claude takes himself a bit too seriously.
Yeah.
At this age. Hold on. I read this and it reads to me like you're being a bit of a diva and being a bit of a dick. Now, look, it's his choice to turn down whatever. I'm just making an opinion statement on it, and maybe I'm wrong, but it just reads to me like, I don't want my character to be killed at the end. And I agree with everything you're saying. It could have been a nice stretch. And when you're talking about Expendables 2, the sad part is, in a sense, it comes towards the final stages of his career.
Yeah.
Where he's humble enough to, you know, in my opinion, my read on it is, you know, you're older, you're humble enough, you want, you know, to accept that kind of role. There,
yeah.
I said it.
No, you're absolutely right, but at the time, you know, his star was not what it was. So it was like, oh, I'm going to be back in the movie theaters again. Because those guys, you know, their movies were not going to the theaters for a long time. And all of a sudden, I think Stallone, you got to give him credit for sort of resurrecting these guys with like Rocky and Rambo in the mid 2000s, because these guys weren't, you know, once Schwarzenegger went to be governor, these guys were like lost in that wake. But anyway, Van Damme should definitely have taken that, and I'm sorry that he didn't. And yeah, it's a very diva-like move and vanity, really vanity. And I'd be interested to hear why, from his perspective, why he chose not to do that.
Okay.
Maybe what you said makes sense, but that would fascinate me because actors love to play evil. So, it's disappointing.
Yeah. When you read a lot about many of the major pro wrestlers, they love being heels sometimes more than being faces.
Damn right.
Gives you a chance to really stretch.
Yep.
All right, Gru, Maximum Risk runtime is 1 hour, 41 minutes. I wanted to ask you about this. 1 hour and 41 minutes. Did it feel right, the runtime, to you? Did it feel a little short or a little long, just real quick?
It felt actually a little long.
Okay.
A movie like but not most of these movies should be about like 10 or 12 minutes shorter than that. They should be about 90 minutes, maybe a little less. But this one obviously it had more of a budget. At least it seemed that way for many different reasons.
I'm assuming you did not look that up.
No, I didn't look it up. I said it seemed. I said it,
you took
it,
you took the Van Damme oath of
yes. I do not look up statistics.
Yeah, I agree, but I'll say it's about maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and I'll tell you exactly where I felt it began to run a bit long. Yeah, I'm going to say it should run 1:38.
You know what? You'd be surprised. Studio people, they actually do that. They actually will want to, you know, cut about, you know, a minute 40 out and bring it in under, you know, 1:40, and we're good. And that means if it comes in at 1:41, not good enough. Like, they are that meticulous.
I'm so dialed in on this movie, I could tell you exactly where I began to feel it. Where they could have trimmed it a little bit. And so, by the way, thank you for renting it on your Vudu, because I had a great afternoon watching it. And, yeah, and I was very dialed in. This one, I definitely watched maybe a little bit more intently. It was on
me
my
too.
Laptop. And,
me too. Well, really? You can watch on your devices? I loved it.
I just
I can't. I can't get into it.
Yesterday was Saturday. Yeah, Marie went to work, and I did my little old man workout and cleaned up, and I sat down. And
but why wouldn't you watch it on the TV?
I don't know. I didn't mind it. I have the Vudu right on. I have your account right on my internet. I have your password. Everything's saved.
You can put that stuff in on the TV too. You know.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, Grew, the rating for Maximum Risk. It's rated R for strong violence and for some sexuality and language. And let's talk about the plot. I got a real quick breakdown of the plot for Maximum Risk. French police officer Alain Moreau, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, makes an astonishing discovery. Listen to this astonishing discovery, Gru. Mikhail, a man who died recently in a breakneck car chase, and what a chase it was,
yeah,
is the twin brother he never knew. I mean, that happens all the time.
Every day. You see it on Geraldo.
Yeah, Alain discovers a web of family secrets that leads him to New York City, where his brother was involved with the Russian mafia. Teaming up with Mikhail's girlfriend, Alex Minetti, Natasha Henstridge, played by Natasha Henstridge, Alain must now assume his twin's identity and go undercover to avenge Mikhail's death. And there we go. Obviously, I gave the real short IMDb summary.
Well, that's the movie.
any thoughts? Let's save it.
No, we can go. We can break it down a little bit.
Okay. Well, here's a couple of things.
Okay, go ahead.
I did. So when you come to the whole twins thing, I'll throw this out to you first as a discussion point for Maximum Risk. You know, I was like, oh my goodness. You know, are they going down this road again for Jean-Claude? What was interesting to me, after they moved beyond the twins angle, was the mistaken identity angle when he goes to New York. You know, like the girlfriend thinks he's Mikhail, and all the mafia guys thinks he's Mikhail.
Yeah, about 2 minutes.
I thought that was that was an interesting.
You are absolutely right, and that's my problem. My problem is that
stuck with it a little bit longer.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Okay, you talk about the twins angle. Now, when we read the plot before we saw the movie, we're both laughing. We're like, oh, here we go again. You know,
right. So
right away, I mentioned the budget. The opening sequence showed me that they're finally spending some money on Van Damme, because everything was upgraded. The action, the stunts, the martial arts, the special effects, the music, everything felt like a bigger and more modern and state-of-the-art kind of movie. I could tell you that they obviously spent some money, because...
All right, but what does that have to do with the twins' angle? Though?
Okay, so he says he's got to assume the identity of his brother and go to New York to figure out what happened. Well, right. Everybody he meets, he very quickly tells them who he really is, even the bad guys. Like, everybody, halfway through the movie, everybody knows that Mikhail's dead. At least that's what it felt like. And I was like, wait a minute. I thought that was the whole thing. He's like, he's going to pretend to be this guy, you know, his brother. And that, to me, was the buy-in. But once that part of it was left behind, it went in a complete, that's why I wanted to bring up, you know, you said that these two people came in and did a rewrite, and I wanted to say that this movie has a great story, but the script takes it in directions which don't serve it well. In this case anyway, you know. So yes, I was disappointed because it became somewhat formulaic after that. Now it was just Van Damme against the bad guys. The stakes were immediately lowered once he, you know, started blabbing to everybody. He should have faked it. That would have added some depth to his relationship with Natasha Henstridge.
No, see, that one I disagree.
Do you?
That one, he's got to tell Natasha because, Alex, he's got to tell the girl because, I mean, she's kissing on him and you know where it's going to go. And, I mean, you don't want to, you know, get into a situation where, you know, you could be perhaps, quote unquote, doing it under false identity. He had to tell the girl at some point, right?
Well, maybe, but I think if he didn't tell the girl, that would sort of make it okay for them to be screwing only in like 10 hours after they met. You know, like I mean,
they don't remember. Van Damme actually pushes her away and says,
"The first time, yes."
Right, but in the course of the movie, it makes it seem like they've been on the run for days before they finally get, let's say, amorous.
All right, and yes, I do agree with your assessment about, you know, the necessity to get amorous in that situation. But at the same time, you know, the short answer is I wish they would have stuck with the undercover thing until they absolutely took it to the limit, and they just abandoned it for reasons that I don't quite get.
Well, what I will agree with you is, and I do have this on part of my final review notes, there definitely is a richer look to this movie. I mean,
yep.
Right off the bat.
Absolutely.
And I do agree. The soundtrack, it's that techno stuff you've heard a million times. You know, there's definitely, you know, definitely a much, much richer, much, much richer look. You know, in terms of, you know, you're saying kind of goes formulaic. I thought there were some interesting pieces here that were not typical to your standard action movie. I mean, there's definitely there's strife within the Russian mob. There's sort of different factions. The Ivan doesn't agree with I forget the older guy who kind of runs the deal. You know, even with Redface, the villain, he's chasing them down separately than Ivan and his guys. So, like, you have, like, different groups, and then you have the FBI agents. So when I'm watching this, I'm trying to figure out who's with who, and it kept me more engaged. It wasn't just, like, bad guy chasing good guy. There were different factions, and even within the bad guys, there you could tell Ivan is, there's some strife there. He doesn't agree with and you could kind of see where it's going to go, but he doesn't agree with the older Russian guy who runs the mob.
Yeah, I did like that it was somewhat unconventional in that respect, but unfortunately,
you don't have to agree with me. I'm just take on it.
No, I do agree that it, you know, the villains are somewhat ambiguous. And it's not, you know, it's at least on the villain side, it's not, you know, a black and white thing as far as good and bad. Unfortunately, the guy, I forgot his name, his character's name, the older guy, the guy who Ivan works for.
Right.
Unfortunately, his performance, that hurt the movie, because that could and should have been a pivotal part, a pivotal moment, you know, his quote unquote demise. And it was like he was there and he was gone without really, it was a one dimensional performance, unfortunately, from that guy, and that hurt it. And that leads me to another point where they obviously spent a good amount of money on those two, on Henstridge and those two great character actors, but I think they skimped on everybody else. Those were the only recognizable faces, really, from that cast, and they really probably should have, gone for some deeper talent, because some of the supporting performances weigh the movie down, I think, a little bit. A guy like Van Damme needs a lot of support, and he got it from three of his people, but, you know, other people kind of weighed it down a little bit.
Okay. I mean, I didn't mind that the older fella's performance. I will agree, he's not on the screen quite a bit, and they don't really flesh it out.
Yeah.
So you know that there's strife, but it's not like they don't really expand on it to where it's almost like a Godfather kind of thing with, you know, the guy at the top trying to be taken down by the... So, he's not on the screen a lot, and I will agree with that.
They don't make it clear what their problem is. Like, it's just like Ivan is just a younger punk.
Well, he wanted to talk to Mikhail, because they hint that Mikhail was like a son to the older Russian, the leader of the mob. Like Mikhail was his favorite, let's say. And Ivan obviously wanted to go ahead, eliminate, and the older guy, he dresses down Ivan. He yells at him and tells him, no, you know, I told you not to kill him, let's say. I want him alive. I want to talk to him first.
Right.
Ivan is more hot-headed, and he wants to just eliminate.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
Okay. How about that?
Grew a couple of factual errors, a couple of goofs in the movie with continuity. The scene where Agent Pellman grabs the chainsaw and he's cutting some fine pork loin roasts in half in the meat locker there.
Yes.
The power cord attached to it is clearly visible. Then when we get the second shot, there's no power cord, and we're led to believe it's a gasoline-powered chainsaw when it's obviously an electrical one.
Yeah, there. Those are.
I told you I didn't think this was very interesting, but also
no.
True.
It's sometimes a lot of fun. There are like YouTube videos that, like, you can watch that.
Yeah.
Point out every single tiny little goof in the greatest movie. So, it's fun looking to see where they've screwed up.
And then, when Alan is fighting with Red Face in the fire, he strikes Red Face in the face, and Red Face lips are all bloodied. And then when they go to the next scene with the last strike, there's no blood on his face.
Well, maybe the fire burned it off or something.
There you go. all right, boy. This came to a crashing halt. You want to take a gander at the production budget for Maximum Risk? 1996?
Yeah, 1996 was post Terminator 2, which was like the first movie, I think, to spend $100 million on a budget. So movie companies were spending a little more. I'm going to say the budget was probably like $30 million. I'm going to go $30 million.
Damn, that Spielberg is good.
What
yes, 30 million, right on the head.
No, it's not.
Like The Price is Right. I have 30
mil
on my notes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm impressed with myself on that one.
Man, if you've been lying all this
no,
time.
No, I'm not.
Podcast,
I'm not.
All right.
I am not.
Andrew, you want to take a gander at the box office? I have totals for domestic, total for international, and then, of course, worldwide, what the take was for Maximum Risk. You can go whatever you want. Total.
All right, I'm going to go domestic. I'm really not good with international, so I'm just going to go domestic. I don't remember this movie being much of a hit. I remember it making a little bit of money, but I don't usually see it listed in the lexicon of Van Damme hits like Bloodsport and those. I'm going to say it made about 44 to 45 million domestically. So
44 to 45 million domestically.
Yeah, 44, 45 in the United States.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer, yeah.
All right, Braxton, lock them in on 44 to 45 million.
By the way, happy, isn't today's Braxton's birthday?
No, it might be Jet's birthday.
Marie made a post like 2 years ago? We brought home.
Oh no, no, we brought him. We brought him home.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, it's not his birthday, all right, but it's when he came home with us. All right, I know he's okay. So sweet. Yeah. He's so sweet. I do love him. Andrew, Maximum Risk definitely did not meet your numerical estimation domestically. I have just a little bit over 14 million as the domestic take for Maximum Risk.
Wow. That's a flop.
Yeah, I believe this was a disappointment. Internationally, ooh, it took in just under 38 million, 37.6 for a worldwide take of just under 52 million, 51,702,000.
I change it. I say 44 to 46 worldwide.
Yeah, I think this was a disappointment.
That definitely it's a flop in the States. I mean, if it's got, you said 30, yeah, we said 30 million, and mm-hmm. and it makes 50 something worldwide, that is not profitable. You know, they said that you got to double your production budget in grosses in order to break even.
Oh, really?
Well, that was then.
On a major film?
Yeah, because remember,
you've advertising.
It's not, yeah, that's not, yeah. I don't know if that's in the budget figure, because advertising costs a fortune.
Okay.
It's just those that money is spent from different places. So, but yeah, that's something. So I guess his star is falling a little bit.
Well,
I'm curious
to
hear the reviews. I'm curious to hear how it was reviewed.
All right, Gru, let me get to it. Maximum Risk scored a 32% on the tomato meter based on 37 critical reviews.
That's not terrible.
Okay. Maximum scored a 34% audience score based on over 10,000 audience member reviews.
That's bad.
Andrew? Okay, let me give you a couple of quick clips on some of the top critics and what they had to say on Maximum Risk. Leonard Claddy of Variety said, "It's a visceral delight that refuses to be deterred by niceties of plot or character consistency and prefers to sweat to emotion." Derek Adams of Time Out said, "A standard Van Damme pick, completely assembled, but with little of the manic edge found in director Lam's Hong Kong movies." Richard Harrington of the Washington Post said, "There are so many car crashes in Maximum Risk that Van Damme ends up playing second fiddle to an ever-expanding salvage operation."
Hmm.
Kevin Thomas, LA Times, "Lam not only handles the bravura action set pieces with ease, but also a capable international cast as colorful and varied as the film's many locales."
Hmm.
Let's see here. Joey O'Brien, Austin Chronicle, "Those who have seen Lam's best work knows he might have pulled it off, just maybe, if he had a more capable leading man."
Hmm.
And finally, Bruce Westbrook of the Houston Chronicle, he certainly did not like Maximum Risk. He said, action flicks should be fun, and this one is a bloody bore." Andrew Gruthius, your time is now. Give us the definitive Van Damme word on Maximum Risk. On a scale of 0 to 4 vodkas or pork loins, Gru, line up that sniper shot and tell us what we minimally need to know about your thoughts on Maximum Risk.
Okay, well, first of all, to expand on what I was saying about the reviews, 30-something percent on Rotten Tomato for reviews, for critical reviews for a Van Damme movie is not that bad. A 30% audience score for a Van Damme movie is bad. And I'm with the audiences on this one, mostly for what it could have been rather than what it, as opposed to what it was. Like I said previously, the movie thinks it's taking a sharp left turn when in reality what it's doing is it's going from the left turn that they took from the very beginning and straightening out and going into formula about maybe a little less than halfway through, because I was dialed in from in the beginning. I was because it was, I could tell right away they were spending more money, so I was already like, all right, here we go. Now we're getting something here. And then about halfway through, it just peters off. It didn't seem to go anywhere. It was just like set piece after set pieces. There are a couple of enjoyable spots. I would have loved to see him do more with the two FBI guys, because by the end, you know, we realize that they're corrupt, working for the Russian mob. But it doesn't really make any sense. It just becomes a okay, good guy, bad guy by the end. I would have loved to have seen those guys in some more lighthearted situations, like that part in when they're lying together in bed while their prisoner is getting laid in the bathroom. To me, that's funny. They show us about 4 seconds of that, if that. That would have been funny, like to have some like banter between them, you know, like a Taggart and Rosewood kind of thing. That kind of flavor.
What do you want? What do you want? Maximum Risk cop?
I want more detailed characters. That's what I want. Would you have been
happier if they opened with Neutron Dance?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay,
but like you told us, you know, they had two writers come in and rewrite the script, and so my assessment is great story, bad script. The script itself turned it into, you know, another shoot 'em up, whatever. I'm sure they didn't name the movie until probably 5 minutes before it was released. I don't understand the title Maximum Risk. It doesn't make any sense. It's got nothing to do with anything.
I would agree with you on that one.
You know, and neither did the two titles that you mentioned. Not that I could think of anything better, but you know, that's the job for the writer. And so I feel like they're just writing the script and let's say, oh, he's taking a risk here, and oh, he's hitting that to the max. Oh, we just got it. Maximum Risk. I mean, that's what it feels like. So in the beginning, it felt like a departure. In the end, it felt like we're back to where we were when we started. So based on that, I am going to give Maximum Risk 1.5 vodka / pork loins out of 4. 1.5. They had the tools. They had the talent. They just didn't get it to the finish line. I will say that the director did the best job he probably could have done with the material he was given. It was well made. The movie was definitely well made and constructed. Looked good, sounded good. Most of the acting is you know who I really enjoyed? Sebastian, that actor. He was very good, and I would have liked to have seen more of him. He was like, you know, oh, one other thing that pissed me off, that really upset me.
I'm so confused. Your review, if it was a schematic,
What pissed you off?
I was upset that I
really thought that cab driver was going to be, you know, was going to be consistent. I wanted him to stick around. I was really disappointed when they killed him off. Like, I looked at the timestamp. It was like 40 minutes in. I'm like, this guy's great. He's a conspiracy theorist. He's a nut job. And the banter that he had with Van Damme, I thought was pretty good. Van Damme really, those were actually my favorite Van Damme moments, when he's just looking at this guy like he's fucking nuts. And he, like, I really enjoyed their scenes together, and I would have liked to have seen that guy more. Then of course they got to sacrifice him, because all the attention has to be on Van Damme, And I understand that at the time, but yeah, that bothered me. I will give it one more positive thing. I always appreciate when they're saying they're in New York and they actually film it in New York, because you can tell the difference. And I really hate it when they try to make like Toronto look like New York City. It just does not work. Here, they're obviously in New York, but a problem with that is, and I want to ask you a question.
Oh, Lord.
I want to ask you a question.
Please.
Do you think that because they were going to New York that Mikhail should have been mixed up with the New York mob instead of the Russian mob? Don't you think that might have been a little more fun?
Never really crossed my mind, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it did. It did mine. But anyway, so yeah. So it's another one that the sum of its parts is much greater than, you know, the actual
sum of parts, much
yeah.
greater.
Yeah.
Missed opportunities.
So yeah, yeah. One and a half whatever's there. So,
wow. First of all, I do know that some of the train and the train fight sequence, some of that was shot in Philadelphia, because I read it and then I was like, yeah, it's not interesting enough to talk about. Like I did read that some of the scenes were shot in Philly, which that's sort of like New York, so I'll forgive
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, probably just as expensive, which makes me wonder why they would do what the purpose of that was. But
all right, are you ready to sit back and let me give my review? All right,
you bet.
As fans of this show, all three of you are aware of, I like to do good, bad, and final reviews. So let me tell you what was good about Maximum Risk. And I think, you know, it's funny. I always like when Andy and I don't talk and when some of our notes actually match. But in terms of look, I thought this was by far the best shot of all Van Damme movies. I don't know Ringo Lam. Clearly, you could see even more, I felt like, than John Woo, sort of that Asian influence. It shot, especially early on, very angle, a lot of angles, bottom to top, top to bottom, you know, east to west. And I thought it gave it a much more rich, which I talked about earlier, a much more richer look to the film.
What did you think about the funeral swerve? Remember in the beginning, after Mikhail dies, they're at a funeral, and you're made to like the way it's shot. You're made to think it's Mikhail's funeral, but it's not. It's just some random funeral.
Yeah, I
that's where we first. Idea. That's where we first see. What was Van Damme's other name?
Oh,
I forgot already. No.
Elaine.
Yeah, that's where we first see Elaine. He's got the bad haircut, and he's at a funeral, and we think it's all right, so you don't remember that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's always with the twins, like one hair.
Right,
but I
didn't like that like kind of fucking with the audience. It seemed out of place.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Didn't bother me, but all right. You know, I thought the movie had a fairly deep cast. I thought it was, you know, for the most part, well acted. What else did I like? I thought Red Face was by far the best and most credible Van Damme villain to date.
Hmm.
Thought he had a great look. He kind of looks like the replicant from Blade Runner. I think he's an MMA guy back before MMA really broke. Very realistic fighting style.
Had a Lesnar haircut.
Can I please finish?
Yeah.
Thank you. barely talks, very physical style, Brock Lesnar haircut. I love this look. I love the villain. I love the scenes with, you know, they're going, I think the elevator's going up and Red Face is going down or vice versa. And, you know, you see that look and you're hinting towards there's going to be some kind of physical interaction. I thought some of that stuff was really cool. I thought Van Damme's acting is much improved here from Hard Target. I thought he took what was a silly premise with the twins, and I thought it would – I don't know. After a while, I kind of bought into it. He made it look good on film. I thought Natasha Henstridge is fine here. Beautiful, She does a good job acting, not spectacular, not terrible. She does a good job. Movie time feels a bit long, which leads me into the bad part of the movie. And again, I feel like for this movie with Van Damme, does it want to be like the French Connection, or does it just want to be another kind of knockoff Van Damme action movie? You know, does it want to be this sort of, you know, rich city gangster, you know, movie, or are we just going to fall into some of those, you know, tropey kind of action movie deals with Van Damme? So I thought the movie kind of takes a middle ground approach here. You're getting the cheesy action, but it does feel a bit richer in this movie. Van Damme, I think he tones down the pecs and the abs, and he tries for a bit more of the adult acting approach. Where I thought was bad was I thought the ending was kind of ridiculous, and I thought the ending ran about 3 to 5 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have ended it with maybe the car explosion where Ivan gets, you know, compelled me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he leaves him in there, and then they go into, like, the meat locker. It just, what is this? I felt like, what is this, Predator 2? Like, it just felt a bit too long. So my final review, and shockingly enough, up until the end, this was perhaps since some of the earlier, you know, earlier Chop Saki Van Damme films, I had an enjoyable experience. It was more of an adult Jean-Claude. It was Jean-Claude with a capital J. I'll forgive some of the ridiculousness because for the most part I enjoyed the movie, and you know, the ending, the beginning and the ending were the ending was really silly, but I did really, really enjoy the movie, and so I'm going to give it 3.5 vodkas or 3.5 pork loins.
Wow.
And that's what I'm going to say about it.
Wow. I guess I'm not surprised. I think because I'm much more of a cynic and a pessimist than you are.
That's why I disagree.
Well, but I'm looking at it.
I think you've been more of a bit forgiving than in some of these Van Damme films.
Well, maybe, but on this one, I'm looking at it for what it could have been as opposed to what it was. I think you're looking at it in a more positive light, you know, what it was, and not worrying about what it could have been. And, you know, like you said, it could have been a raw and gritty French Connection type. And the choices that they made to me were just so conventional and disappointing choices. So, you know, sometimes I see that potential.
I want to get into our next segment, but give me one choice that would you. I just want to hear, like, maybe we could debate it out real quick. What was something that was so disappointing? I mean, beyond the premise, I get it. The premise with the twins was silly, but when they and I
no, I like the premise with that's the thing. I like the premise.
Then all of a sudden, when he's in New York and they're doing the mistaken identity, I found myself a little bit more engaged. Like, oh, they think he's somebody who he's not, and it was interesting to me.
But that's my thing. They pretty much dropped that. They did, you know, like they didn't focus on that. The stakes just didn't seem high. It just felt like, okay, it's now Van Damme against bad guys. I didn't really care about the family situation. I even forgot for a while that he was trying to solve this riddle about his long lost twin brother. And at one point, I was asking, why is he even doing this? Like, yeah, I get it. He had a brother that he never met, but does he really? All right, maybe there you go. There's your title, Maximum Risk. Why is he risking everything he has for somebody he never knew? And, like, it just seemed like he was doing this. I don't know.
All right, so
go ahead.
I don't disagree with you, but he does sort of talk about that in the movie. He finally meets his brother in death, and therefore he's driven to find out what happened. Again, I'm not saying they did it well, but he did say, I think at some point in the movie he says, I first met my brother when he died, and like he wanted to know more. Where I felt like it got a little bit cheesy was they go into the brother's apartment And he sees that the brother kept a picture of Alain when he was in, like, the French military. And he was, like, he's going through all of his artifacts, and somehow he finds the one picture of that. And so he knew about his brother. So, I mean, they're...
Okay.
But it's funny because I do feel like we're given so many like, over the top. Or, you know, like, and here you're kind of bearing down on something that I feel like... you've forgiven other movies, so to speak.
Well, I'll give you another thing that you know. Like I said, I want the thing to go. Like, for example, how about this? He's, you know, he finds out that his long lost twin brother has been killed, so he goes back to meet his family. Let's say he's got a family, he's got a wife, he's got kids that he leaves behind, and they are now the target of the mob. So he's got to sort of defend them and fight for them, you know, because they're being targeted for whatever this guy owed the mob or something. That to me would be interesting.
Isn't the girlfriend targeted? I mean, she's on the run with him.
She joins him. She basically, he goes and finds her, and I don't think she had anything to do with anything. She was in trouble because she was with him. You know, that's
perhaps,
you know, but so it's just like I'm seeing things that, and again, I would have been more interested if it was the New York Mafia. It didn't make much sense to me that you're going from, you know, all the way over there just to fight bad guys from there.
Well, you don't think there's Russian Mafia?
Of course there is. Of course there is. But I think it needed more justification to be in New York. It didn't embrace the New Yorkness. It looked New York and felt New York, but it didn't go as far. It didn't have a lot of respect for its audience. That's the vibe that I got from it.
You mean you didn't get the New York feel with the taxi driver who was like, I'm writing chapter one in my book.
That was great comedy.
By the way, I saw that.
Yeah, you didn't like that, huh?
And that character was like almost exposition. I could tell right away, you know, he wasn't going to, you know. And, of course, they try to give sympathy because, you know, he's a nut, but he's, you know, he's trying the New York dream, you know.
Yeah.
He has the manuscript and he's gonna someday, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, but I liked their chemistry together. They were fun together. So that's kind of why I was a little disappointed when they killed him off.
All right.
But yeah.
I don't disagree with you. I think you're being a bit hard on Maximum Risk, but hey, listen. The movie was a flop, so what do I know?
You know plenty.
But, well, thank you, Andrew. all right, Andrew, that will wrap it up on Maximum Risk.
So is this where they turn off the podcast? Is this where they edit it? Is this where they start the editing process?
Hopefully they won't. Yeah, you rap bastards.
oh, God. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our last podcast on the Last of the Action Heroes Network. Well,
if they want to go that route, I mean, we pull decent numbers, and I think we do a great job. Gru, before we, before we get the hell out of here, you want to check out the latest news on our 80s action stars?
Evan, I really would enjoy if we were to span the universe a little bit.
All right, well, then let's get to it. It's time for Van Damme It, Spanning the Universe.
Van Damme It, Spanning the Universe. Yo!
Chris, Spanning the Universe is brought to you by DU Life Center. Begin a new you. Check out all of their wonderful laser treatments at www.dulifecenters.com or give them a call at 602-274-0068 and tell them that Moody and Gru sent you to receive a big 15% off your first service. DU Life Center, restore your youthfulness with confidence. Let's start that new you. Free consultation, customized services, feel good in a stress-free environment. You know,
hopefully they can take care of that post-nasal drip that you have there.
That's the thing. In life, I want to feel good in a stress-free environment. The problem is, we where we go to feel good, it's a very stressful environment.
Yeah, you did that in an expensive
one. It's like, can I have $300? And you're like, no.
I don't want to pay the $15 ATM fee.
Moody, you have an extra 60? I'm like, I just drank my last vodka. As Craig would say, female drinks?
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Craig.
Vodka cranberry, and now it's a female drinks.
Oh, God. All right, so what are our guys up to this week? Mel Gibson not the biggest anti-Semite in the world now?
Well, you want me to read you? I'll start off with Mel.
Go ahead.
There was an article about how Mel Gibson landed his iconic role in Mad Max. Gru, popular actor, Jew hater, Mel Gibson has starred in many projects that have become huge parts of popular culture, ranging from Braveheart to Lethal Weapon. Well, you know, the Jew hating is just, it's really, it's like the number one thing in news every day.
No shit, right?
I go to my car, I run into my car, like I dive in and I'm like, all right, anyway. Gibson's greatest contribution to cinema, most people feel, has always been his iconic portrayal of Max Rakansky in George Miller's beloved Mad Max movies. While Mad Max has become a full-fledged franchise now, it started with that 1979 gem directed by George Miller. Set in a dystopian future characterized by the breakdown of all social structures, Gibson played the role of a vigilante in Australia who journeys into a world of dangerous gangs and moral decadence. Gibson reprised his role in two projects that followed Mad Max, but he was eventually replaced by Tom Hardy, who delivered what I thought was a pretty solid performance in Fury Road. Although it might seem like Gibson was born to play the role of Mad Max, the reason why he was cast as the iconic character is especially crazy, or I don't know if it's crazy, but George Miller was looking for a rugged actor to portray Mad Max, and he got just that with Mel Gibson. Although the details about the entire incident are somewhat ambiguous, both Miller and Gibson have revealed that the audition worked out for the actor because he had shown up to the audition in rough shape. According to reports, Gibson had been involved in an actual fight the night before the audition, which had contributed to his disheveled appearance. Luckily for him, George Miller was very impressed by Gibson's aura of chaotic violence and considered it to be a perfect fit for the post-apocalyptic world of Mad Max. After the release of Fury Road, many fans have asked Miller whether Mel Gibson would return in future projects. However, the director claimed that having both Gibson and Hardy in a Mad Max film would be inconceivable. Gru, Mel getting into a fight the night before the audition. Not surprising, knowing what we now know about Mel.
Not surprising at all. Thank God he did. I think about the Mad Max franchise. Mad Max franchise is a rare 4 for 4. And I do, in my opinion, each one gets better. Like, I think Mad Max is an excellent movie. I think The Road Warrior is better, and I think Thunderdome is better than them both. And
really?
I fucking love Fury Road, even though as much as we hate Mel Gibson, he's still Mad Max to me. So I would have preferred him, and he wasn't even Mad Max wasn't even the main character in Fury Road. It was Furiosa. But
yes, you're right,
and I think that was a good move. So for what it's worth, the franchise itself and Gibson, I got to give him a lot of credit for that. It's a grand slam of a franchise, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I did like what was the third one again?
Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. I think some people thought it was a minor step back from Thunderdome. I mean, from Road Warrior. But I did like it. I have Tina Turner. I just remember enjoying the movie. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, listen, I don't want – listen, I'm not Mel's biggest fan. All right, so I'm going to beyond that.
I agree with you.
I don't know if I want a 60-year-old Mel playing Mad Max in a in a new iteration of Mad Max, meaning, you know, I thought Tom Hardy was a good choice, and I believe they have committed to a sequel, but I think it's going to be focusing on the Fury character,
right?
Like a prequel to the Fury character. I think it's going to be still under the Mad Max banner, but I think this one's going to be, the next one is focusing on just Furiosa. So I did like the new Mad Max, but into the article itself, I just thought it was, I don't know, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, hey, it's, you know, right, it's right up, right,
kind of leads into sort of what we know about Mel and some, you know,
he
little
beat,
bit of
he
that
beat
instability.
Up, he beat up a rabbi the night before, so, I mean.
all right, well, Shalom Mel Gibson. Gru, Arnie. We'll take a live look. We're going to take a look right now at the live action trailer for World of Tanks, which stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Mila Jovovich.
World of Tanks.
What are you doing? What are you doing, Braxton?
Oh, Braxton.
Yeah, he likes to.
We're working here, too. Braxton.
Yeah. In this trailer, Gru, the two start out fighting evil snowmen for a movie that they are shooting, and then the duo take on a mission to save the holidays for Arthur and his son, Mikey. So what exactly, Gru, is this ad for? Starting December 1st, Holiday Ops returns to World of Tanks across World of Tanks PC, World of Tanks Blitz, and World of Tanks Modern Armor. I guess it's
what
a new video game.
What the hell are you talking about?
It's like a video game. The event features new missions and challenges that reward players with Arnie and Mila-themed emblems, tank skins, decals, inscriptions, and commanders.
What?
I'm so out of it. The last video game I played was...
Wait, is this a movie or a video game?
It's an ad for a video game.
Oh, I thought it was a Schwarzenegger movie.
All right, look, let me just go to it right now. Hold on.
They have trailers for video games now?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And let's see here. Do you see that?
Yeah.
All right. Let me cue it up. All right, Andrew. Here's World of Tanks, official live-action trailer starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Mila Jovovich.
Okay.
Just feel the holiday spirit. You have to go through me.
How come I wasn't invited to the party?
This isn't the new Indiana Jones trailer?
Okay, guys. That's a wrap.
Apparently not.
Thank you so much for your brilliant effort. This was an amazing day. So, happy holidays, everyone.
Great acting.
Phew, what a day. I'm exhausted.
But we nailed it.
Yes.
And it's officially holiday season now.
God, finally.
How you doing, man? Did you enjoy that?
That was amazing, Dad. But please, can we get going now? Is the Holiday Express today?
What is this, Maximum Risk?
Yeah, about that. I'm afraid we're going to make it this year, son.
Dad!
Hey, Arthur, come on, man, we got gear to pack.
I'm coming, just give me a sec, okay?
Who names their kid Arthur these days?
By the way, I think this is a real mistake.
Mikey.
What?
I still have work.
Showing this to you.
It's going
to
take a while.
Well, I don't know what it is.
Perhaps you can go next.
It's an ad for a video game starring
Mikey.
Arnie.
So why am I looking at a little kid and some George Clooney-looking guy?
We're going next year. I'm going to get back to work, son.
This looks like a movie, not a video game.
Let's see. If Arnie doesn't get on the screen soon, we'll ixnay it.
Ooh.
Oh, there we go.
There he is.
Hey, are you okay?
Is he dead? Oh.
He's... Damn it, he's alive.
What? Someone steal your holiday spirit, too.
No, it's just my
baby. Mila looking like she had a little bit of work done on the face.
We'll go on a magical adventure next year. I promise.
We need to do something.
He'll be back.
Don't worry.
Boy, Arnie's hair is a very natural
and
dark,
exactly what
dark
to do.
Brown. Thanks for working in the joke. I really...
Well, I'm zoned in. I'm paying attention to...
Can I show you something?
Whatever this is.
I'm going to pull a nickel out of your ear.
Oh, boy. Loving days is all around.
Do you want to hang in with this, or should we get rid of this?
Well, what is this, the Polar Express 2 now?
Well, a boy!
All right, you can cut it now. I think we you know what? See, here's the thing. Here's the thing. All right.
I'm so
now,
sorry. I
No. No, I'm
I
glad you showed me that.
All the way through.
I'm glad you showed me that because now I'm pissed off because if that were a movie, I'd want to see it. Because you know what? Arnold Schwarzenegger oozes charisma. And he goes all in on whatever he does, including whatever that was. But I don't really play video games, so I'm not going to see any more of that.
Neither do I.
But I would. But you know what? I would watch that movie based on what you just showed me. But it's not a movie, so you know that
I mean,
doesn't make
sense.
The last
video game. I'm so out of it. The last video game I
Asteroids?
Played consistently. Was like Tecmo Bowl in college.
Oh, God.
Nintendo.
Yeah, I remember that. Legend of Zelda, I think, was mine.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Montana to Jerry Rice was unbeatable. You can never defend.
Yeah.
Never defend
I
those
played games. That double dribble game. Double dribble. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that one. I got a press release on Dolph Lundgren. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it. Shout Studios has secured the North American rights to Showdown at the Odessa, a new action comedy starring Oscar nominee Terrence Howard from Hustle and Flow and Dolph Lundgren, Aquaman, and The Lost Kingdom, slating it for a strategic launch beginning with major film festivals in 2023. Showdown at the Odessa follows a proud movie theater owner who must defend his family business from corporate developers alongside a legendary action star as art imitates life in a showdown for the ages. Not much else to say on this group, but any interest as a Lundgren fan? A little bit.
I think that Lundgren, given the chance to branch out a little bit, is I think he's a talented guy. I don't think we've seen him do his. I don't think anybody's really given him a chance to really branch out. I have not seen Kindergarten Cop 2, so I don't really know his comedic chops from that one.
No, but he got the Aquaman. I forgot about it. The Aquaman was a pretty big game.
I didn't see it.
Well, that's your problem.
It sounds like a fun concept. It sounds like basically Last Action Hero kind of stuff, which actually I like. It's the kind of thing where if it's supposed to be good, I'll definitely watch it. You know?
Yeah, they showed a still from the movie and it's like he's got the long hair, like the hair piece on like, you know, jammed on top of his head.
Right.
The only thing I remember about Last Action Hero was Asadi. It got the Asadi. 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 Here's probably the most interesting piece from last week, and I saved it for last. Gru, Steven Seagal is, quote, washed up and a bully. Over the years, many who have worked with actor Steven Seagal have not had the kindest words for him. From Saturday Night Live creator Lorne Michaels saying he was a unwelcome guest host to one of the directors calling him, quote, a nightmare. In a new interview, one former co-star actually revealed that he based a washed-up character that he recently played on Steven Seagal. And he clarified that it's okay he did so since he views Seagal as, quote, a bully. John Leguizamo, who co-starred with Seagal in the 1996 film
Executive Decision.
Thank you.
Hey, please. I'm allowed to show off every now and then.
Yeah, well, this whole podcast is a vanity piece for Andrew's knowledge of the Hollywood.
Goddamn right.
That's true. Andrew is an.
That's a good movie.
He is a knowledgeable.
I really like
dude.
That movie.
Well, let's hear what he had to say about it, though. He claimed that Seagal got physical with him during production of the film. Quoting Leguizamo, the first day of rehearsal, there was director Stuart Bard, Joe Morton, B.D. Wong.
B.D. Wong. He's great. I love that guy. He's great.
He may love you, too. Oliver Platt.
Ah, what are you saying there?
Oliver Platt, we're all big actors, we're all big boys, we're all experienced, and right, but I'm giving you his quoting, please.
Oh. Okay.
And we start rehearsing, and he came in, I'm assuming Seagal, and it was like, I'm in command, what I say is law. Leguizamo told the AV Club in 2012, the actor said that he laughed at Seagal, who then slammed him with an Aikido elbow against a brick wall and knocked all the air out of him. Quoting Leguizamo again, I dropped to the ground and all I could say was, why? Why? Leguizamo recalled, I really wanted to say that he runs like a blank. He has no hair, but I was afraid. So on the days we shot the scene where he died, I showed up early and wanted to see him die. It was like a fantasy.
Oh, my God.
Leguizamo stars in the ensemble comedy horror The Menu, which actually looks good. I've seen the trailer. Playing an actor who's past his prime and wants to revive his career, the 62-year-old star said he was inspired by Steven Seagal in his performance. Quote, I've met a lot of these stars, like, you know, maybe before they were kind of washed up. Leguizamo told Entertainment Weekly, I mean, now they're washed up. I kind of based mine on Steven Seagal. I had a bad run-in with him. We did a movie together. It was executive decision. He's kind of a horrible human being. Promoting The Menu, Leguizamo appeared with some of his co-stars on Sirius XM. During the interview, he again mentioned Seagal and called the 70-year-old actor a, quote, bully. I've worked with a lot of action stars who are now washed up, so that was easy for me to pick on who that character would be. Pressed by the rest of the cast to name names, Leguizamo responded, all right, it's Steven Seagal. I based it on him. In that 2012 interview with the AV Club, Leguizamo claimed that he had heard from Seagal's publicist that the actor had promised to, quote, knock him out if he ever saw him on the red carpet. Quoting Leguizamo again, that's the only downside to my comment. He can actually knock me out. He runs like a girl, but he hits like a six foot five dude who has trained his whole life. The star said, "Gru, John Leguizamo, pretty big name, still going full blast on Steven Seagal."
Well, he's not saying anything we don't already know. I mean, Seagal is a known scumbag. He's always
he's actually stating physical violence, which I don't think that's ever come out before.
No. So if he wants to press charges, let him press charges. I mean, Leguizamo is a guy I actually, you're going to hate this, but
here we go.
I actually worked with him on a movie called The Ministers, which actually never, at least I don't think it came out. I have a copy of it. I don't think I've ever actually seen it, but I worked on it with him. He was kind of a diva on the set from my recollection, but he likes to talk about people, and you know, I don't think that, like, he said something. Who was he talking about the other day? He posts a lot. Like, he was critical of Al Pacino for being cast or for playing a Latino in Carlito's Way. You know, like, so Leguizamo loves to post and loves to talk. So I don't know what he has to gain by telling this story. But if it makes him feel better for his pain and suffering, then fine. But, you know, if you're going to charge him with something, do it. But if, you know, I mean, I just this culture of just people just maligning people just because it's convenient. You know, why, if we've never heard about this, why haven't we until now? You know, why are you telling us now? Why not you know, Kawhi, because you based a character in your masterpiece on him. You know, I mean, come on, that's completely self-serving.
Well, I don't know. Well, where, you're like kind of you're at first you're acknowledging and you're saying Steven Seagal is a dick, but now
yes,
you're.
But why? What's Leguizamo's purpose for tying his dickness into his new movie?
Can I give you the purpose?
Yeah.
Okay. So you hit upon it. And I never worked with John Leguizamo. I'm just a common man.
Just a common man.
Reach to the screen.
For his hand, with his hand.
The iron workers in Detroit. No, Leguizamo has turned into a very wokey. I read about those comments about Pacino, and of course he's completely wrong, in my opinion.
Me too.
He's become a very wokey kind of jerk. So while I have no doubt that what he's saying is factual,
me too,
that Steven Seagal did do this, he's just trying to perhaps position himself a little bit better on the social justice scales and probably trying to knock some people down a peg. I mean, he's really accepted that whole woke thing, and I don't know, from my perspective, just reading the occasional article and, you know, what he posts and things like that, he's just trying to prop himself up while trying to tear some people down. Does Seagal deserve it? Maybe, maybe not. I'll leave it up to pundits like Andrew Von Gruthius to figure that out.
But he also knows that Seagal is not going to hit back because he never does.
Well, according to Seagal's publicist, Seagal told him, if I run into you on the red carpet, you're going to get KO'd.
No, but I mean, like, he's not going to hit back from this attack, meaning Leguizamo saying this is not going to get a response because nobody hears from Steven Seagal anymore. He lives in like another. He lives in like Russia. He only makes movies. Like, I don't even think he's got roots in America anymore. So I don't see him responding to that. And but yeah, we know all this. So John, next time tell us something we don't know. How about that?
All right. Well. Das Vidanya to John Leguizamo and Steven Seagal. Andrew, before we wrap this up, please give us one thing you're watching this week.
All right. You might get mad at me because I think I broke a rule.
We have rules?
Yeah, well, all right.
This rambling montage of a podcast. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going back in time for this one. I'm watching something that I've seen before. But I haven't seen it in a very long time. It's not considered to be a good movie by most critics and most people. The star of the movie, this is considered one of his weak spots. I watched it last night after I haven't really watched it in the past 10 years or so. And I found myself laughing from start to finish and laughing hard. And this was a movie from 1989 called Harlem Nights. And I just wanted to do that for this because I was just laughing my ass off. It was just, to me, it was absolutely hysterical, way funnier than I remember it being and much better made than I remember it being. And I think it gets a bad rap for, I think, being such a vanity project for Eddie Murphy, which in a way it was, except it wasn't, because he is the straight man. He gives everybody else the funny stuff to do. He gives it to Della Reese and Red Fox basically are that movie. Richard Pryor and even, you know, Charlie Murphy, like everybody else is funny. Eddie Murphy is there to drive the story along, and I think that's very generous of somebody for directing a movie. So Harlem Nights, I watched it last night on a whim, and it's a fucking funny-ass movie and deserves a second look. So that's what I'm watching.
I'll keep that in mind. I mean, clearly Andrew, he so badly wanted to get those thoughts on wax about Harlem Nights.
Well, I figured either because I wanted to text you while I was watching it.
He texted me that he was watching Harlem Nights.
Did I?
Yeah.
I did. Oh, sorry. At that time, I wasn't planning on using it for this. But then, after I was done, I thought about it, because I've said on earlier podcasts,
I'm like, I haven't watched anything new this week. I have nothing to add. You'll never say that.
Well, no, because it was either that I thought you were going to say or Rocky Five.
So I mean, all right, you did.
No, but actually, everything that I'm watching that I have used for this segment, those are Tulsa King is the I used that last week, and you know that's really the only thing I'm watching that's new, and I'm currently I guess tonight is the next episode. And you haven't watched it yet, have you?
No.
All right, you got to get on that.
All right. Let's try watching something out of our sphere of influence here.
All right. Yellowstone, Kevin Costner.
I heard it's very good. I haven't seen it, but I heard it's very good. I actually had nothing until yesterday afternoon, and I watched, and again, it's just one thing I watched this week. 2022 Netflix, the movie Troll. It's a 2011. They released. It's a Norwegian movie called Troll Hunter. It was a found footage movie about the lore of trolls and how this guy was like hunting trolls. It's a found footage movie, like these giant trolls.
Right.
So they kind of rebooted the whole thing. It's a big production. I think it's the guy who directed Tomb Raider from like a year or two ago,
right?
Which I've not seen, but it's a fun standard monster movie on Netflix. Nothing great, nothing terrible. If you got an hour and a half and you want to see a cool monster movie with good special effects, 2022 Troll. There.
Well, I'll tell you what I tried to watch based on your recommendation, yours from last week, Barbarian,
which was
Barbarian, and after about 15 minutes, I had to turn it off.
Did you get to the big reveal?
The big reveal. If it's not, no, I didn't, because I didn't, and I will finish it. But maybe it just had to do with when I was watching it. It was a very uncomfortable movie to watch, and maybe that's by design.
It wasn't really creepy yet.
It was definitely raising some questions, but it just felt icky watching it, you know.
But I am going. There's a big reveal about 20-30 minutes into that kicks the movie off into a.
Yeah, I didn't get you know where direction. I left it. Where I left it, it was basically they were sharing the house, and he was like, want some tea, and want some, like, and I was like, I just felt weird, so maybe I just needed to be in a different mood to watch it.
Alright.
But I am gonna watch it, because it is a very interesting concept, so. I just felt.
Remember, I used to joke around with Andy in the 90s, you know, I'd say, hey, have you heard that new artist, Bob Seger?
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. He likes what he likes.
Nothing has changed at all.
All right, crew. I don't think it's 1 month's time. I think we're going to go with this next week. We're going to return.
Yes.
With a very special Van Dammit. We were so stunned by the awesome beauty of Natasha Henstridge that we're going to take a much closer look at the movie that put her in the forefront. It's 1995 Species, starring one Natasha Henstridge, Michael Madsen, Ben Kingsley, Forrest Whitaker, and Alfred Molina. If you build it, it will come. Gru, special Van Dammit, Natasha, and Species.
Yes, we're like doing now like 6 degrees of Jean-Claude Van Damme. We're like branching off a little bit, and I like that. The double Van Dammit. This week and next week. Definitely looking forward to that. I've seen Species, but not in a long time. I remember enjoying it a lot. I remember enjoying her a lot, and a lot, and again, and no, just kidding, or maybe not. But looking forward to that, without a doubt. Looking forward to seeing it again. It's been a long time. So definitely was like 20 years old, that movie, I think. Maybe more. Right?
Yeah,
from like the 90s, the mid-90s, around this time?
definitely put Natasha Henstridge on the map. Great cast. And of course, a lot of connections to Alien.
Yep.
So what I'm looking forward to actually is having you and I break down a science fiction sort of action movie, which I don't think we've done yet. So
not really.
We didn't do the Alien franchise. No, I'm curious to see hear your take on a sci-fi movie. So,
and don't get mad at me for not remembering. You know why? Because we are approaching our 100th show. So we've done a lot. So there might be some that I forget that we've done.
But we've not done a science fiction movie. So we should do
Alien at some point. Like, you and I are fans of that franchise. I'm surprised we haven't.
When we get to it, I'm sure we will. When we get to it, we'll get to it when it makes sense. So, all right. So next week, Species, and that's it for this episode of Van Damme It. With minimal effort, we say bye bye to Maximum Risk. Andrew, you want to take us out of here?
Yes, we'll take us out to enjoy the rest of this Sunday. I hope you out there are enjoying yourselves as we approach the holiday season. Shortly from now, in just a week's time, we will be coming back at you through the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, maybe, with a review and a discussion of the Natasha Henstridge classic Sphere.
Yeah, well,
Species.
Sphere?
Why do I keep saying Sphere?
I think there is a science fiction movie.
There is.
Sphere.
Why do I keep getting this screwed up? Anyway, it's Species next week. Species, I say. One more time, Species. And
Species.
Until then, ladies and gentlemen, no retreat.
Oh, you got it right. I was about to say. You...
No retreat.
No surrender. Knox and Cow, everybody. Don't edit this product.